Welcome to Continued Success, your Friday dose of Phillies candor. I'm Justin Clue. You can follow me on Twitter at Justin_Clue. And here is also, I'm going to say it that way, Liz Rocher of Yahoo Sports. Follow her at Liz Rocher. What a fun 1:30 in the afternoon it is today, Liz.
Here is me. I am me here.
Another Phillies podcast for the hottest Phillies time of the year. Everybody's talking about the Phillies, Liz. They're all
Everyone.
Saying, what's going on in the old Arizona Farm League? And they're saying, what's the order you would place Phillies prospects from? We're gonna fuck this guy up in the major league soon. To this guy's gonna be getting different directions from different people for a little while yet. Or they're saying like, well, at least, you know, that whole situation up in New York seems a lot worse than anything going on down here, forgetting immediately all my problems with this team over the past season. But everybody, there's just the talk of the town, Liz, just everybody. I mean, have you ever been more excited to be a Phillies? Have you ever been more aware of the Phillies than you are now?
I can't say that I have.
Exactly.
I don't think anyone has thought of, no one in Philadelphia, at least on social, in our social media circle, has thought or spoken about the Phillies unless they are one of the prospect heads for 2 weeks now. Between the Eagles fucking up constantly and looking ridiculous, Nick Sirianni trying to get fired, trying to be the first coach outright fired this year, to the Ben Simmons mess over on the Sixers, the Phillies could stop existing and no one would notice.
Well, I mean, more or less, what would you call what they're doing right now? I mean, no, they are at the very least existing. And this isn't surprising. This is typically a time of year when
they're not in the playoffs. Who gives a shit?
why would you talk about the Phillies right now? They're not
exactly.
Doing
There's
anything.
No reason.
Firing some coaches, I guess, and that's, you know, you can publish your general outlooks and projections all you want, but at the end of the day, this is just not Phillies time.
No.
At least it's not anymore. It used to be, but no, this is not a time of year where you need to dwell on what the Phillies are doing just yet. So that's why we can talk about some other teams today. I mean, the Mets aren't in the playoffs, but everybody's talking about the Mets.
Yep.
That, would you prefer that, Liz?
I'm going to say no. I'm going to say no. I would rather, because it's not the type of talk you want. It's not the type of talk you can be like, well, this is going to be fixed easily, you know, with whatever. This is literally no one wants to work for our organization. No one with any type of pedigree, no one with any talent for running an organization wants to run our organization.
Yeah, I mean, try to break down the last few weeks for me here. I know the recent culmination of all this Mets stuff has been, and by the way, every day, every week that goes by, I think about the conversation we had about, is Metsing over? And a lot can happen in a couple of months, let me tell you.
Anybody, and I'll say this, anyone who thought Metsing was over is unfamiliar with the history, the deep cursedness of that franchise, that they
scared.
It's just one cell phone after another over and over. Not even a new incredibly rich owner will change anything.
Man,
it's fantastic.
I was worried. I sure was worried, but boy, I feel stupid to have been worried now. I mean, what are we looking at right now? I know Trev and I mentioned briefly the tweet about a former like Pirates first baseman Dylan something was contacted about being on the short list for a Mets position, and he was like, I'm just running these car dealerships, they haven't reached out and I'm not interested. And we had fallen from like the Mets are gonna go after Theo Epstein to this car dealership guy is not interested. Like, and now what, Sandy Alderson's son works there?
Oh god. I would see like a few people, I think it might have been John Taylor, he either tweeted or retweeted this morning, someone needs to hire Willie, you know, a major league franchise needs to hire Willie Randolph now. And I'm like, the only opening I know of is on the Mets. The only real opening I know of. And they already embarrassingly fired him once. That was, I'm pretty sure Willie Randolph was the call after, you know, call to him from the East Coast after the Mets had finished a West Coast game. So it was like 3 a.m. in the East, and they had presumably waited all night to make this call to fire him directly after the game.
I mean,
is that Willie Randolph or is that Jerry Manuel? It says a lot that I don't know. That I'm not sure that it could have been either of them.
There's a swirling, you know, or like a whirring blender of Metsdom that it's tough to keep it all straight. I mean, even just the past couple weeks alone have been a confusing, hard, difficult to keep up with the Mets news cycle in the best possible way when you're just watching from afar. Also, did you see that Andy Martino published, like, while everyone else was like, wow, this is terrible, he published a story where, like, Billy Beane was like, oh, the only reason I would leave, what I would consider leaving what I'm doing now, is for Sandy Alderson and Steve Cohen. And oh gosh, actually no, he sees it as a thrilling opportunity. So like Billy Beane rejecting the opportunity to work with the Mets isn't, you know, bad. It's just something that happened. It's just not in the cards right now. The working for the Mets is great. It's ideal baseball positions. Like let's be honest.
Something everyone wants to do. And you pay no attention to the many people who don't want to do it. And who have said they don't want to do it in no uncertain terms. It's a great place.
Fortunately, the Mets are nowhere near the playoffs. But you know who is in the playoffs are the playoffs teams. They told me I have to work on my transitions at Podcasting Academy.
At Podcast U.
I refused. I think it's stupid. So I just tear the audience from one topic to the next.
You've been doing it this way the whole time. I'm not going to change now.
I grab you by the collar and I drive down the street to the next topic, dragging you along the road. That is how we do things here, and that is how we like it. It is a process that cannot be improved upon. So that being said, how you liking this NLCS? Braves having it locked up, seemingly. Then didn't factor in Chris Taylor 3 home run game. Bet you Braves didn't have a response to that, because who, you know, would have planned for a situation where that occurred?
Now, you would think that after the Dodgers got rid of their magic playoff wizard, Kike Hernandez, and let him do amazing playoff things with the Red Sox, that they would be bereft. But no, they knew guys that you've never heard of and who do not contribute much during the regular season have come to the fore. Like Chris Taylor. God, I know there's one other player on the Dodgers who's like exploded in the playoffs. Like, of course, they have this like endless supply of dudes.
Cody Bellinger has resurged after a god-awful season. I mean, to an extent. I don't know if you would say it's a true resurgence, but he's definitely popped up in like two of the keyest moments of playoff series this year. You know, obviously Max Scherzer has been pacing back and forth in a boiler room somewhere waiting for his next opportunity to pitch. It's interesting when you measure things on the playoff scale. Like I've done a few recaps and previews for Baseball Prospectus on various games of these various series in the NL and AL. And it's funny how it can go from like, well, like when we're talking about this bullpen, you know, they blew it in one game by allowing 2 runs, but then they were lights out. So like you're talking about this, is this a strength? Is this a weakness? The truth is, yeah, the Braves have run into like some more bullpen chaos, I think, this year. I think their fans would probably be more nervous about a bullpen situation, more so than the Dodgers. But in either case, the bullpen is such a huge dominating factor in certainly in the NLCS, and well, I mean, also in the ALCS. Like in the way just baseball is played now, it's impossible for it not to like almost take over the game. The fact that either you're starting like a key game by saying like, oh yeah, this is gonna be a bullpen game. You know, or you know, you're having one of the many 2 to 3 inning starts that like true starters have come out and had in this series, like a couple of times. I mean, I know Framber Valdez gave the Astros like a tremendous eight inning start exactly when they needed one. And a couple of teams have been like fortunate enough to have a guy come out and really, you know, bite down on a wooden spoon and give them what, you know, a full start used to be. But the bullpens have like basically taken over, it feels like. And, you know, again, that's just the modern game. But that's what I think the NLCS is going to come down to, like whose bullpen manages to hold it together. Because, I mean, look at the Dodgers. It's crazy that with Scherzer and Walker Buehler set to pitch games 6 and 7, game 5 was a bullpen game. And like they could have been eliminated, right? Yeah, they could have been eliminated in that game. And they're like, it's a bullpen game. I mean, that's crazy to me.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think another manager would have let, what was his name, Frambler, Valdez, another manager wouldn't have let him stay out there that long. Other than Dusty Baker, who is, I think, probably the oldest old school manager in the entire game right now.
Yeah.
He's famous for ruining arms. But in this case, you know, he actually let a starter go almost the distance because he was doing well. I don't think Dave Roberts would have done that, except with maybe Max Scherzer. There's like five pitchers of the entirety of baseball as a whole that managers trust in that big of a spot to do what they're supposed to do. And it's like a combination of no one has any trust in any of their players in these big moments anymore. And, you know, they have to switch it up. They have to continue doing this because they know the other team's going to do the same thing. You know, if they keep the same starter out there, but the other guy, you know, they're just throwing out a constant barrage of fresh bullpen arms. Where are you? You should be doing the same thing. It's really annoying. I hate it.
It must suck for these relievers. Well, I mean, you know, it doesn't suck because they're playing near the peak of the sport they play professionally. But it must suck for them in the context that, like, a bullpen, any bullpen arm, especially like when you play for a team that relies on its relievers as heavily as the Dodgers do, anytime you enter a game is a chance for you to be the GOAT. Like that's in a bad way. Like for you to be the one everyone blames if you give up the pitch. As we learned, like watching Hector Neris, you're only really as a reliever defined by your failures, like your successes, barring becoming one of the like elite relievers of the league, your successes get pretty much ignored because that's just considered normal. That's considered what you're supposed to do. So everybody remembers the failures and you get the blame pinned on you more so than anybody else. And now we're in the playoffs where one slip up could mean the end of your season or putting you in a hole that the rest of your team isn't going to be able to climb out of. So it's wild that like they have to come into a game and every time they do, somebody like Evan Phillips on the Dodgers can come out, throw a clean inning in one game, be considered a reliable arm. Next game, gives up 2 runs and the Dodgers lose. Last night, did you see that slider he was throwing last night? 86-mile-an-hour slider that just every baseball writer on the internet tweeted out that they had gasped. And so we all must have just gasped in unison at the way that ball moved. When he got another strikeout. Like it's crazy how much more pressure it just puts on an already stressful and already stressful position where blame tends to gravitate.
Yes, agree. There's nothing else I can say about it. You know, these have been some of the least enjoyable playoffs I can remember. I mean, seeing the Rays get eliminated, the Rays and the Giants get eliminated was delightful. But that also meant the teams I also don't care for have moved on and forward. Like, there are no good teams left. There are no good teams left. Ugh.
Where do you see what do you think is more likely going to be the dominating factor in the ALCS? The Astros seem to have found their pitching again after giving up like 25 runs in 3 games. I think they allowed 3 in the last 2. So like they managed to get their pitching back right as the Red Sox offense went cold. They spent a full season in Boston being like, you know, in the depths of the darkness on their offense, and then being like among the hottest hitters in the league. So this fluctuation is, I think, nothing new to people who've been watching the Red Sox, but that it's happening now is obviously a huge problem. Kike Hernandez has been awesome to watch. I mean, him on the Red Sox, and then I hate to say it, but like Eddie Rosario on the Braves.
Yeah, that's it.
I mean, good Lord, these guys are unbelievably on fire. You talk about like guys every year getting clutch in the playoffs. This has been some of the best and most clutch hitting I've ever seen. I mean, Rosario just doesn't stop. Like every time he's at the plate, it's appointment television, and he's doing something crazy. And that's like before you even factor in that like he's made a couple of nice catches in the outfield too. And that's what the broadcasters last night talking about the wrong Rosario. Did you see that?
No. Oh, God.
I don't know if it wound up being just a theory or not, but they kept referring to Rosario's speed. And then finally people started responding on Twitter being like, why are they talking about how fast Eddie Rosario is? He's not fast. And they realized they were confusing him with Ahmed Rosario. And it's because they both played in Cleveland, and obviously they have the same last name. And I think they just got notes or whatever that somewhere along the line there. But this was, again, I think this was a theory. I don't know if they actually acknowledged they were talking about the wrong person. But yeah, that was just like, here's this guy having this incredible postseason run, part of this incredible narrative for the Braves that they like rebuild an entire outfield on the fly in July. And not just Rosario, Adam Duvall and Jock Peterson have both done incredible clutch things for the Braves throughout this playoff series as well. But like, here's this guy having this incredible postseason run, and the broadcasters are like, yeah, it's this guy.
This is the guy. It's him. It says Rosario. I didn't check the first name.
How capable are you of looking at the Braves and you know, because I think they are objectively a fun team. How capable are you of looking at them and think while thinking about them objectively? Can you separate them from their uniform? I cannot.
No. Sorry. I literally can't. I cannot. There's some teams I can do that for. You know, like when the Nationals were doing well a couple of years ago, I could get behind them in the world. I think it was the World Series, you know, and that was, I could do that because I didn't outright hate them. I despised them, but I wasn't like, I wasn't actively angry at them like I am at the Braves all the time.
Right.
Yeah,
when the Braves are celebrating, it feels like the bad guys won.
Yeah, always, always. And I'm going to use this platform to announce my plan to get the heathen fan base of Atlanta to stop doing the tomahawk chop.
That's never going to stop.
Stop it. No. You know how you stop it? You treat it like they treat homophobic and racist chants in European soccer. What they do.
But doesn't that. Oh, go ahead.
When they hear them, they stop the game. And if they stop, and if the chants don't stop, the players leave the field. And if they still don't stop, the game is called, and the home team, like, loses points or some shit. I won't pretend to understand all that.
That's the problem, is that you're assuming the team would be down for, you know, being against it, but they're not. They wouldn't agree to leave the field because they'd be like, what? It's cool. It's our chant. Like, no. that we haven't reached that point yet with the Braves, the organization.
This wouldn't be something that the Braves organization would control. This would be an MLB mandate that the umpires execute, that the umpires say, you guys got to leave the field. That's the only way it would work. That's the only way to make them stop, is for it to have actual consequences on their team. And that would make the team want the fans to stop saying it. Like, hey, you guys do this and it costs us every time. Please stop it. We're going to have to forfeit a game next time.
Okay, that makes a little more sense, even though my first thought was the umpires are probably even more aligned with the side that wants to do the chant than the team is.
Well, tough shit for them. They have to do their jobs.
Like, I know.
This becomes like, you could do it half-heartedly, but again, you have to do it because it's going to be obvious when you're not, because the fans are still doing it.
I mean, how far away can we be from it being eliminated? Since, you know, I never thought we'd see the day that Cleveland would change their name. I mean, I figured it would happen, like, you know, before I died, but you can't even imagine it because these things are so entrenched. So like that, but that's happening, and that's huge and important and awesome progress. So like, how far away can we really be from, like, cause this is pretty, it's pretty aggressively similar.
It is. I think we are close. We're closer than we think to the Braves changing their name. They have been shockingly resistant. Not shockingly. No. They've dug their heels in. They've dug their toes in. They have not tried in any way to change anything, despite, I think, removing those – that was it last year or the year before? They removed the foam tomahawks from the seats of playoff fans. Like, great. If they do eventually change the name, the tomahawk chop will not stop. Fans will continue doing it. They'll continue doing it in the stadium even without prompting.
Exactly.
That's just going to have to eventually die out, as it will. It'll take a while, but it will, because they have to, if they're not being prompted by the stadium anymore, you know, by the PA to do it, I think it has a better chance of you know, waiting as small children are brought to the ballpark and, you know, they don't know what it is anymore.
Right. That's true. But, man, that's a lot of time that's got to pass.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm guessing, 100 years?
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, with a national audience again, it unavoidably becomes a conversation that everybody, that people in baseball are talking about, because, you know, they do it the entire fucking game. It's impossible to miss. Like, god damn, everything that happens, they do it. It's insane. Like, I know we all know this, but I just, getting that reminder night after night of this NLCS is just like, oh my god. And like, now more than ever, they're playing it more than ever.
Just to annoy, I'm going to guess, me and you personally, but.
I assume everything the people on television do is towards me personally.
Yes. Always. Like, I am not joking when I say the Dodgers winning the next two games is a matter of life and death. Life and death for my happiness, or at least for my sanity. I won't watch if the Braves, I mean, and imagine if it's the Braves and Astros. Who do you root?
No. I can easily imagine that.
Oh, no. Of course you can't. Because it's the worst thing that could happen.
Yeah. But, hey, look. Here we are sitting here not talking about Gabe Kapler's Giants.
Oh, fuck yes.
Does that not feel good? I mean, I think it's important when we talk about how there's no good teams worth that we want to root for in the postseason anymore. That also means that, you know, not only will three of the teams we're talking about not liking go home empty-handed, but some teams are already out, like the Giants, which is very surprising to me. I am on the record multiple times assuming they're going to win the World Series, because that would lead to the most direct impact on Philadelphia. And I still believe that would have been the worst case scenario for Philadelphia baseball fans having to sit through a winter. Like, that would have been the worst. The Braves winning will suck, but it's just in that general way. Because they're a division rival, because we, you know, Phillies fans and Braves fans interact a lot in negative ways, certainly at the end of this season, because they play each other a lot, because they were hoping to be a closer competition or better competition in the NL East. It's the Braves, you know, they're rivals. So it would suck in the general way that seeing a rival succeed while you have failed egregiously The Giants, I feel like that would have been much more personal. Like, I don't think it really matters if the Dodgers win the World Series in the context of, like, what it does to the Phillies and their fans and their coverage. And it certainly doesn't matter, I think, with the Astros and Red Sox. You'll probably get, like, a Nick Pivetta narrative with the Red Sox. And who else is out there? There's a couple of bad ones. But, like, like, they're small daggers rather than just getting cleaved in half by drama and commentary like Gabe Kapler winning the World Series would have done.
Yes. Like, imagine all of the self-important puff pieces about Gabe Kapler's journey that we're.
Well, they already came out too. Like, they were. We went through a cycle of these too. So you're right. It would have been even worse.
It would have been even worse. And people, I'm sure those writers are filing them away, saying next year.
Yeah.
I don't think. I'll say it now. This was I'm hoping this was a 1 year wonder. This is one of those teams that got hot 1 year. It's like that 1 year the Red Sox won. What was it, 2011 or 2012? Like, for no reason, they just were really good all of a sudden, and then they were immediately bad again.
I mean, that feels like a possibility, given that this Giants team is held together by its veteran core, but that's part of the reason why it was so surprising they were as good as they were this year, because people had concluded that these guys were aged out that Buster Posey, Brandon Crawford, and Brandon Belt couldn't have the kind of seasons they had, that other players wouldn't come through, that Logan Webb wouldn't emerge as something of a revelation in their rotation. It was a lot of surprise factors and pleasant surprise factors. And I think that you could then logically say, like, okay, but like, what are the odds of that happening again? And I do think that's certainly plausible. But I can't help but go back to, we spent like the entire season being like, the Giants will fall back to earth. Giants will fall. This is just a mirage.
Waiting.
It's all-star break. All right. Giants come back, have a terrible second half. Hey, Gabe Kapler's teams, they typically have bad second halves. You know what I'm talking about. Ha, ha, ha. We're Phillies fans. And all we feel is pain inside. And then, you know, oh, it's August. Well, playoffs are almost here. Giants are on their way to 100 wins. And, oh, my God. Giants and Dodgers, you know, they might make the Dodgers miss the playoffs, even though they've got like 105, 106 wins. And it just kept happening. It just kept building and building and building. And that's why I was like, who is really going to stop this? Throw in a little bit of that bullshit Bay Area Giants cutesy wootsy magic. Mm. Scoop a bay water. Yeah. Scoop a ice cold bay water filled with the residue from a seal's back. And you get the kind of mess the Phillies have found themselves in, in 2010, where it's just the Giants plowing through other teams because they've got all the momentum. And give credit where credit's due. They also had some incredibly talented players, but you know what I mean? Like there was always a factor of like, I don't know, it's just magic, I guess, factored into those Giants runs. And this felt like this was one of those.
Yeah, it really did. I'm eager to see what happens next year. If the good season means the cheap Giants won't invest anymore in talent, or will invest, you know, a small amount because they're like, they did it once, they could do it again. 88-year-old Buster Posey is ready to get behind the plate once more. It'll be interesting to see if they don't have another good year, how Gabe Kapler handles it.
Hmm.
Because since he's been out of Philly, he had the shortened year, which was really nothing. And he had this year where everyone was constantly raining praise down upon him and his team for being gritty and doing well in the, you know, in the face of you know, the opposite expectations. We'll see how he handles helming another team that is not good. If they do indeed turn out to be not good, I could eat my words and would gladly do it if they're bad. Well, not gladly. I would angrily do it, but.
Well, Gabe Kapler said at the end of that series, there's no reason to be angry. Oh, remember, the series ended on a controversial check swing call, by the way, which I think we've already just blown right past.
Oh, yeah, completely forgotten.
That's hysterical. He said, there's no reason to be angry. It's just a disappointing way to end it. But there are other reasons we lost that game. And, you know, I guess I might as well just delve into this now. But, like, this is part of the reason why, even if he winds up being this wonderful, glorious manager out there, that this was not going to work in Philadelphia. Because here he is at the end of a series that ended with them. I think a lot of people thought they were going to win, and they lost. They lost the series. And not only did they lose it, they lost on a controversial check swing call. And Gabe Kapler was out here telling people, hey, there's no reason to be angry. Not even like, hey, don't be angry. He's saying there's no reason to be angry. I mean, can you imagine? Do I have to say it? Can you imagine this scenario, but they're the Phillies instead of the Giants?
No.
And he's out here telling people there's no reason to be angry. How well is that?
A crowd of fans would engulf him and then move away, and there'd just be like the skeleton left, like in a cartoon. Like, that's what would happen. Like, I just, and it's even such a misunderstanding of human behavior, not just of Philadelphia in general, but of human behavior. Because, of course, there's a reason to be angry about it. What's wrong with you? And every discounting, you know, for a moment that they're the Giants, every Giants fan should have been angry about it. I would have been. I would be crowing about it nonstop, making sure no one ever forgets it. It would make me so angry. And you want your manager to be like, it made me angry. It made me upset. It was something we couldn't control. But, you know, the rest of the game was in our control. And, you know, we didn't do enough to make that last moment not matter. So next season, you know, I'm already ready for us to come out fighting. Like, that's how you do it. You're just like, wow. There's really no reason to be angry.
Well done, Liz. That would have been better. And it was kind of just like a neutral statement it just states the obvious. But I don't know. He's always got to give people lessons. Like, he's always got to make it sound like this was always the plan. We had a plan for this. We were prepared for this. Relax. But in this case, you can't really say that because they literally lost. Yep. It's not like when the Phillies put in a position player to pitch and he was like, yeah, we worked on this in spring training for exactly this scenario. And you're like, okay, but this isn't a good scenario. No. You don't want to be in this scenario. But in any case, they lost and their season ended. So he's got to at least acknowledge that, like, okay, unideal, but don't worry. I don't feel any negative emotions about this, and neither should
this
you.
This is not going to drive me to do anything more or better. I am already perfect. Like, I feel
he's like a social media account. He only wants to publish stuff that makes him look good on the surface.
every single thing every statement he makes like that is engineered to make sure people know that his way of thinking and the way he lives his life is superior to everyone else's.
I figured it out. I can help you because I'm also really nice.
I'm nice. I'm cool. I'm even keeled. Look at me. I don't get ruffled.
You don't know how to get there. I got there, and I can show you because, again, of how nice and decent I am. So don't worry. You'll get, you know, here.
If there was ever an alien masquerading as a human.
Our first stop.
It's him.
The store that sells glasses with no frames or with no prescription lenses in them. Just we got to start there.
I mean, I'll say this. That look worked for him.
Of course, his looks work. That's the whole point. He wouldn't walk outside in a look that didn't work.
Yeah, but that's kind of the problem because it felt very stage managed. Everything, it feels stage managed. Like, I'm looking at him, I'm like, he looks like a member of the Joe Madden fan club.
Oh my God. He was cosplaying as Joe Madden.
Yes.
I didn't even think of that.
I only thought about that just now, and I'm extremely upset that the moment has passed and that it will make no sense to anyone for me to tweet a picture of him.
Tweet
a picture of them both. Like, the moment's passed, but we can wait again until next season because he will absolutely bring those glasses back.
He'll bring, I assume, a more fashionable pair. That's better part of a year away, Liz. I mean, fashion is going to evolve to that point. I'm sure he'll show up in whatever is, you know, the top item on the fashion churn. Could it be more obvious? I've wandered into a conversational branch I do not know how to climb out of.
Now I'm hoping that in the cycle of fashion, we somehow go back around to that sort of undefined period of like 98, 99 through like 2009, 2010, where there was no discernible, memorable, interesting, or good fashion of any kind. Like, I've watched a spate of like 2000, like early 2000s movies, and the fashion is unexplainable. Not in a like 60s or 70s or even 80s way. It is unexplainable, designed to be the one era of fashion that the fashion industry does not go back to. And yet I'm hoping that it does, because it would bring back into fashion the trend of wearing goggles on your head for no reason. That is what I want him to wear next playoffs. Just come with those ridiculous goggles on your head. Maybe turn an upside down visor. That was also part of that.
Well, I mean, you know, I feel, what if it starts like sleeting really hard? Then you're gonna look really smart with your
goggles.
I'm
disguising one of the minor characters in Can't Hardly Wait. I just realized.
What if You think that's wearing a visor upside down? That protects you from the moon, I'm pretty sure. The way that a right side up one protects you from the sun.
Makes I'd like sense. That. Yeah, I mean, I can only hope that this happens, but I think he'll probably stick with those glasses, which will give me an opportunity at some point next season to point out that he does look like he's trying to be the new Joe Madden, because he clearly is. That's clearly who a lot of these modern managers model themselves after, because he was sort of the prototype for it in both Tampa Bay and Chicago.
Yeah, that's true.
That trendy analytics guy who takes analytics and old school stuff and mashes them up, and he's got wine at the press conference and the glasses and his hair. You know, it's exactly who Gabe Kapler wants to be.
Yeah, wow. That's very accurate.
Yeah, and I have to say, a guy like Craig Counsell does not give a shit about any of that.
No.
The dude wears the same stuff all the time. He is always the same in the dugout. He is quiet, unassuming. He's Craig Counsell. Thank you, Craig Counsell, for existing and making sure we'll never do a podcast specifically about how much you suck.
Thank you, Craig Counsell. Wow, I never thought we'd get to I didn't plan for a Craig Counsell thank you session in today's episode. That's, wow. You never know where these are going to go. Well, let's take a quick commercial break. When we get back, we'll stop talking about other teams. We'll talk about how everyone's favorite topic, how the 2011 Phillies season ended and the evolution of our feelings since then, right after this. Well, as we always do, surrounded by the sounds of our environment, sirens and buzzsaws for me. Lord knows what's on your end, if anything, Liz. Some people would tell me just to close the door, but I refuse. The weather is too nice.
Oh, there's lawn. Someone's doing lawn work outside of our apartment, and it's gray and disgusting. It's gray and disgusting here.
Well, as we always do when we're allowing the cacophony of delightful sounds to emerge from the neighborhoods in which we live. We're going to talk about the 2011 Phillies for the last time ever. This will be the final conversation on the NL East champion 2011 Phillies, at least on this stretch of time where we've been talking about what the Phillies of 10 years ago were getting up to at various stages of the baseball season. What a ride. What a ride it's been to relive. And I know we weren't the only ones doing this year. And obviously, who wouldn't want to talk about the last great Philadelphia Phillies baseball team on its 10th anniversary, especially on the also 10th anniversary of the Phillies not making the postseason. So, there's, I think, a lot of excitement about getting to this point in the process. I think another question is, where do we go from here? Which is, interestingly, where the Phillies found themselves at the end of the 2011 series to an extent as well. But before we get into all that, Liz, I think the 2011 NLDS is a story a lot of people know well. We've certainly retreaded it plenty of times on Phillies Twitter, Phillies sites, Phillies coverage, Phillies writers. I mean, we've managed to talk about this team, and we will continue to, because they are record-wise the best Phillies team in history. They're also the last Phillies team to make the playoffs until, the next one comes along. So they're a key reference point there as well. And I think there's a couple of things that really define this brief postseason appearance the Phillies made in their greatest season of all time. And one moment is Ryan Howard's home run in game one of the NLDS off Kyle Loesch that retook or gave the Phillies the lead, a huge booming home run that I felt like it was too high. But then just looking at his body language alone, I was like, oh, no, he got it. He doesn't do that unless he got it.
I was at a bar in Philly when that happened, a bar I do not know the name of, with people I do not remember. I might have just met them at a tailgate. I didn't have tickets to the series, but I came up for the opening, the opening game tailgate, and there were a bunch of people there I didn't know. And like, yeah, we're gonna go to a bar. You want to come? I'm like, sure, strangers.
I love bars
and strangers. People I met an hour ago and have been drinking heavily with.
But yeah, I think that moment stands out. I think Ben Francisco's home run in St. Louis obviously stands out. I'm just doing this off the top of my head. But like no, I don't know if there's a particular moment, but you point to Cliff Lee's loss in that series as another reason it didn't go the Phillies' way, because he gave up, I believe, a 4-run lead, something that was very uncharacteristic of him at the time. That game I was at, I was at the game Cliff Lee lost, and I guess that's the last Phillies postseason game I've ever been to. Wow, that's a bummer.
Yeah, seriously. Wow.
Think about it that way. All right. Well, cool. But yeah, and obviously, though, the most lasting image, as I believe Secret Base framed it in their video about the end of the Phillies run in 2011, is Ryan Howard's final at bat, where he grounded out, didn't even make it to first base, collapsed with a torn Achilles. And that was, you know, people say that's the lasting image. That's the symbol that the Phillies' time was over. I say it was like, you know, a day or two later when somebody published a picture of like Ryan Howard on a scooter in a grocery store. That was a bummer as well. And like plain clothes, because it was like, oh, remember, they're out of the postseason. So obviously he's not just wearing his Phillies uniform around town. So that's over. And also, look how brutally injured this poor man is. And I don't know. It's tough to talk like, oh, and I knew it was over, because it's all in hindsight.
Oh, yeah,
I
mean, none of us knew it was over. We went into the next. There were very few staff change, you know, personnel changes on the field or off. There's no reason. They had 102 games. They won 102 games. You don't change anything if you don't have to, because everything worked. And so they really didn't do much. And everyone expected things to remain the same. And we didn't realize until, I'm going to say, probably the end of the 2012 season, maybe even a little bit later, what that game had meant. That game had not only been sort of the end of a very productive section of Ryan Howard's career, the end of the Phillies' dominance. It was also pretty much the end of Roy Halladay's career. He was never the same after that game.
I was going to say Cliff Lee maybe too, but no, he put together some pretty dominant performances, I think, in 2012.
Yeah.
So he wasn't quite done yet.
I think Halladay was pitching through an injury and only made it worse. And it was, you know, and now with everything that's happened with him and what we've learned, it's even more meaningful. It's even more meaningful, but in an unpleasant way, you know, to think about all of that. It's a tough thing when you look back at everything that ended that game that we didn't know. I don't know what would have changed, though, for me if I had known, other than doing what I had been doing, which is appreciating the hell out of the Phillies.
Yeah, I don't know how possible. I mean, obviously, every time the team that won the World Series in 2008 wasn't as, you know, good on paper as the 2011 team, and maybe arguably with any of the other teams that had gone to the postseason in this stretch in 2009 and 2010, but. I remember being bummed, but I think, I mean, and you know, devastated is more of a correct term. And I know I've talked before about having watched the final game of that series on a plane with like, I don't remember. I feel like the sound was off for part of it. So I felt like I was suffocating the whole time. And then I remember talking about Ryan Howard collapsing with somebody. I was like having brunch with in Los Angeles. So I must've been going, I guess that's where I was flying. But anyway, the recollections have gotten hazier as the years have gone by, but, I've been trying to figure out like just where I was at mentally at that point and how that kind of evolved into 2012, which was the first year they hadn't been to the postseason in a little bit. And I think the truth is that I just really had gotten adjusted to the Phillies being a playoff team that, yeah, like, obviously I was curious to see where things were going to go. And I was like, oh, my God, Ryan Howard's hurt. This sucks. Like, one of their most lasting, iconic players went down. Unbelievably, like, lovable player, franchise player who came up with the team and everything, has been a huge part of their success. Yeah, like what's going to happen? How is this going to impact his career moving forward? So obviously there were a lot of questions, but I guess there was also just this built-in sort of, yeah, but like, you know, there's still they still made the playoffs 5 years in a row. Like, they're not going to be so different next year that, you know, it's not impossible that they're in the postseason again. So, like, yeah, there were concerns, but you also had a harder time imagining what it was like for the Phillies not to make the playoffs, because for the past 5 years they had, you know? And so when they finally did, I remember 2012, I remember opening day and Roy Halladay starting and Jonathan Papelbon closing it out. Like, I think Halladay went eight and Papelbon just pitched the ninth. And it was just this 1-0 win. And everyone was like, well, get you. This is if the Phillies are going to win this year, this is how they're going to do it. Like, really low scoring games, because they're not built to run on offense, and they're going to have to rely on the strength of their pitching staff. You know, that's why they got, that's why Papelbon was their biggest get in the offseason, because they were like, well, let's have somebody who can lock down these games that we're presumably going to have, you know, solid deep starts in most of the time. And obviously that didn't happen. Obviously, so having so little offense, you know, having like Juan Pierre in there, and maybe this was, I don't know if Lance Nix was there by now, but suddenly you started getting guys, and I don't know if we were just getting older, but suddenly that all that, it felt like all the fun internet stuff that the Phillies had generated at that point started to kind of fade away as well. I mean, so I think it was a combination of,
what can you do with Ty Wigginton and Michael Young?
Oh, we found something to do with everybody. We found something to do with Michael Martinez, you know? Like, there's no boundaries on our characterizations and stuff. I think it really is a combination of, like, a lot of people who had been part of that early, way too online generation of Phillies fans and watched them become division champs and a playoff team and World Series champions and everything. I think that everybody was maybe getting older, and when you realized it was this, like, era was over, it was like, yeah, we're fans. We're going to follow, like, what happens with this team next. And obviously you and I did that because we're still here talking about them today. But I think there was eventually, not the night we're talking about, not the night Ryan Howard collapsed. That was just, like, devastating and painful. I think the realization that, okay, now nothing is guaranteed anymore. And it's not that it did before. It's just, you know, there were questions about whether or not the Phillies were going to make the postseason in any one of the years that they actually did. But at this point, in hindsight, hey, this has been a playoff team for half a decade. I think there had to be an adjustment, an emotional adjustment made across the board when we realized, okay, maybe this team isn't that team anymore. And maybe I'm not the same fan I was before. Not like you're a bad fan, but just because you're getting older and you're focusing on things other than funny blogs to put on the internet.
As the person who took over the Good Fight in 2013 and spent her free time putting funny blogs on the internet.
As if that was not exactly what I was doing.
Exactly.
I'm referring, of course, to the fact that you were able to make a NCAA bracket out of Phillies blogs, and then at a certain point you weren't anymore. And I'm saying this.
Everyone was like,
this
"Why
was
am
that
I bothering?"
Point. Exactly.
This sucks. I mean, I spent the first half of this season as the Phillies started to accumulate a thoroughly mediocre record, trying to look at teams that had gone to the playoffs before, who had, you know, like a down year and then bounced back, teams that had won 100 games and what happened to them after, just like looking for any evidence that this was just temporary, because it didn't seem like it could be. It didn't seem like it would be for a while, because the team was mostly the same. It had only gotten better with Jonathan Papelbon. But, you know, I hadn't realized that the bottom dropped out. And by midseason, when Hunter Pence was traded after the parts of two seasons that make one whole season, and Shane Victorino was traded, I'm just like, oh, it's really over.
Yeah, that's true. I think we can safely call that the point where they started taking it apart. And I know the Phillies didn't think of themselves as out of it and, you know, on the way down, so they could be back on the way up eventually until, what, 2014 or 15?
It was later than that. It was, I think, 2015. Wasn't that the year they traded everyone?
Yes.
What?
I don't know. Ryan Howard hung on for a while.
He retired as a Philly, but like there was the Chooch, maybe it was 2016, the Chooch trade, the Hamels trade. What else? The Utley trade. There were a few others. Rollins left. Like it was a slow. It was like a slow drip of just
true.
Everything. And it was why the Phillies. Because I remember we were on them for quite a while, being like, "You're obviously rebuilding. You've held on to these players for too long, and you're now and you can't get rid of them. And you need to acknowledge that you're rebuilding because it looks like that's what you're trying to do. Are you trying to start a rebuild?" The baseball version of Clippy pops up. Looks like you're trying to start a rebuild. Can I help?
Ruben Amaro clicks. It's like, no, I canceled. Disable Clicky.
Exactly. Because they seemed to have one foot in and one foot out for a while. Like, as long as these guys were still on the team in any way, they didn't feel like they could really concede. But at some point, it all went. And that's, we all realized, oh, we'd been in a rebuild for years. The Phillies just hadn't acknowledged it or right. really done anything to significantly rebuild.
Part of a rebuild is looking at the thing you have to tear down before you rebuild it. So I think it's fair to say they were rebuilding. They were just in the looking at the mess phase.
Yeah. I mean, it was quite a realization once they finally sort of acknowledged the rebuild and Amaro left, which was also during that Hamels yeah. trade year. Like, that's everything changed that year. I profiled that entire year. I think of the 2018 BP annual. Because it was one of the most significant years the Phillies have had in the last decade, because everything changed. They got a new GM. I think they got a new coach, or they got no
Annie
coach.
McPhail.
Yeah, there's Andy McPhail. Like, there was a lot of stuff that happened in that one year.
They gave
year.
That press conference about, hey, we're going to use sabermetrics. And we were like, everything is fixed. Yep. Everything is fine, and it's fixed.
Yep. And then,
thank you, Andy McPhail.
But it was just sort of the realization that the last handful of years have been spent denying that they needed a rebuild, denying that they were in a rebuild, and then tearing everything down so quickly and making a bunch of changes all at once. Really quickly. and it was like, I remember thinking, we must be closer than we think. We just spent like 3-4 years doing nothing.
Yeah, we got to be inching towards the part where we sign a bunch of recognizable or all-star players.
Little did
right?
I know. Little did any of us know. Like, when you look, I think the feature of hindsight is realizing how stupid everyone was, including yourself.
That's why they call it hindsight, because you do it from your own ass.
You started that sentence and I knew how it was going to end, and you didn't disappoint me.
So if it's not clear by now, Liz and I have no intention of running through, you know, the NLDS of 2011 and talking about each game and what happened and everything. I mean, you know, I mentioned the parts that I remember most off the top of my head. You could throw some other stuff out there and I'd probably remember that too. But the fact of the matter is, like I said, there's been more coverage of this season that is doing a more detailed look at this final series the Phillies played in, I'm sure. And you also definitely remember it, and you also don't necessarily feel like remembering it. So I'm trying to just use this time as like an examination of what it was like to go from the top of the National League to realizing you weren't that anymore, to the very bottom. To where the Phillies are now. And I feel like at a certain point, and I do accredit this more to just like development on the fan side rather than development on the team side, because the team's going to do what the team's going to do. Your reaction to it is like really the only thing you're in control of. And I think when our generation of Phillies people were younger, like 10 years ago, then like we were investing so much of our, you know, oh yeah, this is great, this is too, and like we still invest a lot of time in it, but I've also just grown a lot more numb to the Phillies, I feel like, and they haven't really put a team out there that was, dare I say, as likable. Like I feel like that's not a very bold take, because you know these teams were winning, you know, these five straight division winning playoff reaching teams. You know, they're easy to like because they win, but there, you know, there were some fucking dickheads on these teams, certainly. Like, they were not winners up and down. But I do think, like, the core members served as not just great examples of baseball players, but we're also pretty lucky that, as far as we know right now, like, none of these guys were secretly monsters, mm-hmm. or are, like, you know, serial anythings. Like, they are just guys who played baseball. And it's always great to see, like, Jimmy Rollins come back and do broadcasting. It's always cool to see Ryan Howard coaching third base in, like, a youth game on Instagram or something. Like, it's always cool because you don't have to have that little twinge of dread or disgust when they pop up. My wife gave me this awesome Phillies t-shirt for my birthday, and it was hand-drawn, like, 90s style for 93 Phillies, said the Wild Bunch, and it was caricatures of Kruk, Dalton, and Dykstra. And she gave it to me, and she was laughing, and she was like, you know, I didn't really think about it, but I forgot to check if any of these guys were, like, giant scumbags. And I was like, well, one of them is, but only one out of three. Like, one of them has died, and one of them is the current broadcaster. So, like, two out of three ain't bad.
Yeah.
Given the state of things.
For that crew, my God.
Yeah, especially for that team. And that, before this stretch run that ended in 2011, was the last Phillies team to make the playoffs. They were, you know, we talk about them. We reference them all the time. I guess that's my point, that, like, I forget what my point is. The point is that we got very fortunate with these groups of teams, and yes, it was very heartbreaking how each season ended that didn't end with a World Series title. But, you know, we certainly would say, oh, we're so lucky at the time, but you don't really have an appreciation of that until you've been back in the desert for 10 years. And yeah, boy, it's, I really miss that. Like, I wouldn't be able to participate in it in the same way as I was able to, you know, during that Philly stretch run when I was, you know, living close to the ballpark in Philadelphia. And I hope to recapture that, because there's now, you know, and there's now a generation behind us that have become Phillies, like, more like Phillies fans present in the circles we travel in, who deserve to get that experience too. And I really hope they get back to that. But I think it's fair to say that this organization, just in general, on field and off the field, just has different vibes, feels a lot different than 2011. And I think, is that a fair thing to say?
Completely. You know, time marches on and changes everything, and no one can live forever. I feel like the Phillies were always destined to change in this way once David Montgomery died. Or was no longer actively involved in the team. And that's just the way it is. Like, again, you don't know how good you have it until it's over, because now we can look back and, you know, be upset that it's not like that anymore. But, you know, be satisfied that the Phillies were that type of organization for years and years. You know, you just don't have... I forgot. I've also forgotten my train of thought, getting emotional talking about David Montgomery once again. Oh, well, no, like the team was always destined to change. And it just sucks that they've changed so far in one direction.
Yeah.
That now they're being forced to course correct again. And I don't know if anyone else that they've brought in is any more likable than the people they just got rid of.
Well, those people who love to point out, like, when something, you know, when a bummer, something that's like just a bummer happens on a team, like they get rid of somebody people like, or they don't spend too much in free agency, and somebody chimes in with, like, hey, baseball is a business. I have a Wolf of Wall Street poster on my wall, and baseball is a business. And you're like, that's great. I don't give a shit about the business side of baseball. I just want the stuff I want for the team when it's playing baseball, which is, you know, the part I like, the baseball part of baseball. I feel like people, like, that's what the Phillies have basically become. They've become just another team. There's not a lot of signature stuff about the Phillies right now. They got the home run hat this year, but I don't even think they were the only team to have a home run hat this year or ever.
At least they had something.
They had something. You know, I like celebrating home runs as a team, but yeah, it just feels different culturally, and that's because it unavoidably, like you said, is. You know, there's simply different people in the positions that were filled by, you know, David Montgomery and others in the 2011, in the time we were talking about. So it's unavoidably a change, and I feel like it's made the Phillies a lot more bland. Like, It's poor decision making and everything, but it has all culminated in a franchise that's just that just is, it blends in. Like, they get no spotlight on the national stage very often. Like, they got picked for, I guess, a couple of Sunday Night Baseball games. But, I mean, like, in all the promotional stuff, you never really see the Phillies featured very much, even though they have an MVP contender and a Cy Young contender on their roster after 2021 and other marketable stars. So I feel like they get ignored pretty largely there. I think at a certain point in their season, they started getting ignored by the city. There was a real lack of engagement and a lack of personality and identity. I feel like across the board, there just wasn't a lot. And again, winning changes everything. Winning fixes everything.
Yeah.
They win like 90 games next year. We'll give them a personality. It doesn't fucking matter. I'm just saying those things are also missing. And when you try to match up like where the Phillies are right now with what we're talking about, this wonderful glowing golden era to which nostalgia has only given more shine in the 10 years since, those are the kind of differences that come to mind, like kind of the deeper, more widespread stuff, I think, because players are obviously going to be different from one team to another over the course of 10 years. But I think organizationally, we're just looking at a different picture, too.
Yeah, it's I do like what you say, winning changes everything, because even in this season, this past season, we saw that. I cried about the Phillies this year, like legitimately cried about them winning a baseball game, sweeping the Mets, all of that. Like, that was a legitimately emotional moment for me. It felt really, really good. And then after that, they just fucking blew it completely down the line, thoroughly. It just didn't live up to that. But during that period, that winning streak, that weekend, everything felt good. The team felt alive. It felt like something was building, even though it wasn't, and it was all a lie. They didn't know that. It felt like winning is the anecdote. Like, if you think back about it, I remember saying at the time, the 2011 team didn't have a ton of personality. They had Hunter Pence, who was out there and big all the time. There was Victorino, who was always chasing after squirrels in the outfield. You know, they had the personalities that had been there forever that everyone knew.
Well, but that's the thing. Everybody knew and they were familiar. It wasn't just that they had an identity. They were familiar. They were like our guys at that point.
Exactly.
And also, like I said, if you win, we'll give you a personality. That's literally what we did in these like online Phillies circles I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. We literally gave them personalities. We gave Chase Utley a personality. Like, it's, you know, expansions on what we knew about them from real life personalities. But like, we gave them personalities.
Yeah.
Like, That's literally what happened.
Like, watching them in the dugout in 2011, I remember commenting in a recap, this team looks businesslike. Everyone's just coming and doing their jobs. They're doing well. They celebrate, but no, like, there isn't a whole lot of, you know, like a 2016 Cubs energy about them. It was just a lot of professional baseball players doing their jobs and doing them very, very well. But they were winning, and so it didn't matter that, you know, sometimes it seemed like a joyless pursuit. It didn't matter. They were winning, and that made all of us happy. Like, if the 2022 – oh, Jesus. The 2022 sounds like a made-up year. If those Phillies do well, and they're, you know, they'll still largely be the team that we saw this year – we'll figure out how to make them fun and interesting. It won't be hard because we'll want to do it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And, you know, I look forward to the day that happens. But, yeah, I do. If in terms of, like, this last golden era and how it ended in 2011, I do hope that younger Phillies fans get to experience what we experienced, because it was a lot of fun and it was deeply formative. And you're always thinking about, like you were saying, when they won 8 games in a row this year, when they won 5 games in a row, when they had to, when Bryce Harper was on fire, when you had reasons to care again. I remember watching an Andrew McCutchen at bat and like being invested in every pitch again. That was just like a regular season game, probably in like May or June. And they were just, you know, they were trying to do something, and then all wasn't lost, and they weren't mundane and constantly 500 all the time yet. And yeah, I was invested, and I was like, man, there were about 4 years in the middle of these like bad 10 years where I was completely disengaged. And little by little, these like moments where I've invested in the team, even just one at bat at a time, have started to be sprinkled into more and more seasons. And this year was probably the most intense version of that. And, you know, this is, we know how it ended. But at the end of the day, I want to recapture that, A, for me selfishly, but also B, so that other Phillies fans can experience that, because there's nothing beats it. When you have the team to beat, nothing beats it. Yeah. Well, that'll do it for this episode of Continued Success. I just cut Liz off because we don't need to hear any more from her.
No. I was just thinking about what we could do next year. And, well, I don't think we want to go through any of these teams in detail. Though the 99 loss team is very tempting. It's several years away, but deserves our attention, but we can't ignore the parade of random ass dudes that populated the Phillies starting in 2012.
Yeah, we'll take a gander at a rando every week on Continued Success. We'll just pick a guy either from the year we're currently in, or from the year we're 10 years beyond, or from anywhere in that stretch. And we'll do a segment on all the, you know, the Delman Youngs and the Andres Blancos and all
Juan
them.
Pierres, Mike Fontenot.
Yeah, all the Fontenots.
Nate McClouth.
We'll do that.
I could go on and I won't, but I could. That's a great idea. Yes.
Well, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and download all your favorite podcasts that are part of the Good Fight podcast family, including Hit and Season with John Stolness, The Dirty Inning with myself and Dr. Trevor Strunk. We have a new episode up right now on the 100th loss of each Phillies season from 1938 to 1942. Five straight seasons of 100 lost Phillies games. And we have a
you guys love bonus. The fun.
Bonus addendum to that episode as well over on the Hit and Season Patreon at patreon.com/hit and season. We did a 30 minutes on the 1904 Phillies, the first 100 loss team in Philadelphia franchise history. We talked about their 100th loss of the 1904 season. Also over there, for $5 a month, you get access to Absolutely Hammered with me and Chris Jones. We'll have another episode of that show before the month is out. And since it's spooky season, me and Liz are going to review the movie Night Game starring Roy Scheider. A baseball slasher about a guy, I'm pretty sure I'm remembering this back in my mind, about a guy who kills people only when a specific pitcher is starting for the Dodgers, I want to say. I think that's the plot. And obviously Roy Scheider's the man to catch him. So we're going to watch that movie, a movie I have seen literally undiscussed, unmentioned by Twitter and baseball movie reviews forever. I've never seen this movie talked about, and I cannot wait to watch it.
Where can you find it, Justin, in case our listeners want to watch along?
You know, let me just make sure. I mean, I'm going to start with the internet. Like, that's a good place to start if that's where you if that's a place you go a lot, I would say. And you know, click and click the free tab. And it's not available anywhere for free streaming. Looks like. It looks like it's not available at all. So looks like this movie wants to be utterly forgotten. And if you haven't seen the poster, it's a hook, somebody's hook hand piercing through a baseball. That's the vibe we're going through for here, just so everyone knows. So Liz and I will track down versions of this movie. As I just helpfully pointed out, available apparently nowhere on the internet. But I'm sure we'll be able to find it. I encourage you to find it too, so you can watch it, talk about it with us. Where that's going to be a lot of fun. That'll come at the end of the month, closer to the Halloween holiday. As always, thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next time on Continued Success.